This is Papa Smurf. You're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast with ODB and the Mayor.
You're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast, brought to you by Custom Car Show Productions, which includes Orange Beach Invasion, Scraping the Coast, Sicknick, and Slamber Party. Make sure you search on Facebook Scraping the Coast, Scraping the Coast Show on Instagram. Also, Sparkles Detail, Till, Tim and Tanya, ODB and the Mayor.
This is dedicated to the niggas that was down from day one. Welcome to Death Row.
Like we always do about this time.
Yeah, 9 Deuce, Death Row Records.
Yo, it's Our Lifestyle, the podcast, episode 48, and this one is titled The Chronic. Got ODB in the house, and this is going to be kind of a special podcast edition of Our Lifestyle, the podcast. The reason why I say that is this is going to be the first one that we dabble on the music topic, but we don't hit on anything, for the most part, cars or trucks, if you will. Now, that's important because, again, we're kind of expanding out of our normal territory. But we will hit on a couple of cars because in this episode, when we talk about the classic Dr. Dre, The Chronic, which, by the way, dropped 25 years ago today, December 15th, 1992. Crazy. Same day today, Eminem's album dropped. So, you know, we wanted to kind of bring you a show that really talks about this really badass album that came out in the early 90s, set Dre and the whole hip-hop industry upside down, and really kind of changed the way producers produce music today. So we've got a lot of different aspects of this episode that we're going to talk about, including kind of going through each track, talking a little bit about some facts that maybe some of you guys didn't even know. Now, you do know that I'm a huge hip-hop fan. I'm a huge music fan. I think one of my favorite genres of music is the G-Funk era. And that started really with The Chronic and what Death Row Records and, you know, Daz and Dre, Warren G, all those guys were pretty much putting together. And like I said, we kind of rolled in with the intro, the classic intro to The Chronic. And on that track, basically got Snoop, Dre. On that track, we hear Impeach the President by the Honey Drippers. And that's one of the most sampled songs of all time. Track's real short, less than 2 minutes. And as we kind of get in here, what you're going to hear is I'm going to go through each different track, talk a little bit about it. And then we've got a special guest on that is really turning the whole Instagram world upside down with his music posts. He is a collector of, you know, tapes, vinyl, CDs. And he really, really, really does a badass job with these anniversary posts that we call them. You know, the anniversary of an album, such as like today, 25th anniversary of Dr. Dre's The Chronic. He'll do different posts to highlight awesome artists when Prodigy from Mobb Deep passed. You know, really awesome post where he'll essentially go out and grab all of his particular artist items that he has or owns. And then he'll lay those out and take a really cool photo, and then he'll post. Sometimes he'll give a little bit of insight into an album and things like that. And I really appreciate what he does. That's why I wanted to bring him on. Now, a couple things that, you know, before I kind of get back into each track on this album, of course, you're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast, episode 48, titled The Chronic. And 25 years ago, Interscope dropped the classic Dr. Dre, The Chronic. So The Chronic is the debut solo album by Dr. Dre, again, released December 15th, 92. Through Death Row Records and was distributed by Priority Records. If you watch the NWA movie, you got a chance to see a little bit of that insight with the Priority Records and what the relationship that Ice Cube had. You know, in the movie, it's portrayed that he went in with a baseball bat and cleared off the desk of the head guy at Priority. But obviously, if you were a fan of hip-hop in the 90s, you knew about Priority Records. Now, the recording sessions for the album took place at Death Row Studios in Los Angeles and at Bernie Grundman's Mastering in Hollywood. We're going to post a lot of photos, and I'll do some audio excerpts from this episode on Instagram. But, of course, the classic cover from that album is Dr. Dre, and it is really paying homage to Zig-Zag Rolling Papers. So if you go out and you kind of research, like, why was it called The Chronic, Snoop had overheard his dealer and he misstated a word, and he heard chronic. So they started using that word, and as they were recording the album and whatnot, I guess rumor has it, that's, you know, he kind of, man, you got to call this the chronic. So that's kind of where the name came from. And if you look at, and we'll post this, the zigzag, the old school cover, if you will, to those. You got a guy, and he's holding up, you know, whatever, he's rolled, and he's got his big beard. And in the Dr. Dre cover, you've got him with that famous, and this in the 90s, this hat was so famous. It's just a black bill hat. So it's a black hat. It's not a flat bill. It's, you know, a little bit of an arch in it. And it has that kind of iconic artwork from the zigzag Rolling Papers. Now, when we have our guest on, he's going to talk a little bit about, there's a couple of different versions of the album pressing. So you may or may not, if you pull out your Chronic album, there was a version where it has featuring on the cover, and it mentions, you know, Snoop, Death Row, the DOC, but there's also a version of that that does not have that on the cover. So we'll talk a little bit about that. That was something that actually, to be truthful, I didn't know until recently. So pretty cool there. Again, I love these kind of little facts about different albums and things like that, because I've been listening for 25 years and some of the stuff I just didn't know. So the music video for the famous Nothing But a G Thang, that, of course, really cultivated, really the car scene, kind of brought them together for that iconic photo shoot, and, you know, features DOC, Warren G's in there, Dre, Snoop. And if you've seen the long unedited version, of course, it kind of shows Snoop's in the old, you know, kind of in the ghetto hanging out, and he's got his, I think it's a white hat that has the Chronic leaf on it, and he kind of goes outside and jumps in, and they're cruising, and it's really an iconic video. The music video sees Dre, again, venture into LBC, Long Beach, which is where Snoop came from. He picks up Snoop, and they go to a block party. As arguably, this is really the first gangster rap video to gain crossover appeal. So at the time of the track's release, on MTV, the video ran about four times an hour. So that was one of the facts that I found on it. And that really helped, I think, it gain the mainstream attention that it did, because we grew up here in Lando Lakes, Florida, and at the time I was in middle school, and you probably think back, if you're in my age group, you'll remember there were some tracks or videos that would play repeatedly, and it was like Cypress Hill, Insane in the Brain. You had Dr. Dre, of course, you know, when that came out, Nothing But a G Thang. You had Coolio's Fantastic Voyage. Of course, Nirvana, that played, you know, the grunge. So, I mean, over and over and over again, and I think that that helped, you know, back in that day, no internet, things like that. You know, we ran out and bought the tape cassette or the CD or the single. CDs were, they were out, but they were, you know, not as popular as they were a few years later. So the Chronic, or Nothing But a G Thang, basically, I think that track, as I mentioned, there were some different places that they recorded at. So I'll talk a little bit about that. The Nothing But a G Thang was released, if I remember correctly, on November 19th of 92. And when you kind of do the research on a lot of these album drops, including some of Eminem's hits, which we're going to see again, it dropped today, his new album. But when you look at some of the Dr. Dre albums, I always remember, Ice Cube fan. I'm a huge Ice Cube fan. And a lot of his albums came out like at the end of the year, November, December, and they kind of were able to, what's the word I'm looking for? They were able to gain the steam of the holiday season with people spending and things like that. So 11, 19, and 92, Nothing But a G Thang drops, and that was recorded at Dr. Dre's house. Now, I don't have all the facts on it, but if you did watch The Defiant Ones on HBO, you'll remember that we did a show about it. And during that multiple-part series, we learned different things where Dr. Dre was basically shopping that album for about a year. So it's always intrigued me that if most of that album was completed and he was shopping for a deal that ended up with, you know, Death Row, I wonder if that track was recorded pretty much after a lot of those other songs. And maybe the deal was, hey, we need a track that's going to be kind of a radio hit, because a lot of the album is kind of that dark gangster, if you will, that type of thing. And it had that West Coast flavor. But the West Coast flavor that they added to Nothing But a G Thang, again, it really resonated with everyone throughout the U.S. So even us little white dudes, I'll say, white guys, if you will, in middle school, man, we were hooked. And we saw that video a lot. And that, of course, transcended into, we wanted to get the hats. We had the black hats with the Chronic leaves on them. And Snoop was rocking that stuff everywhere. It was just badass. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue, talk a little bit about facts here with this album, and then we'll hit up with our guest.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Know what I'm saying?
Fuck with Dre Day. So, sorry, this one's going to be a little bit more vulgar than our other episodes. We appreciate you guys kind of sticking with us with it, but we're keeping it real as we can, man. I'm just a white dude from the suburbs, and I'm trying to keep it real. So, Dr. Dre, The Chronic, this track, track two, F with Dre Day, and Everybody's Celebrating, of course, that was Dr. Dre's response to some of the diss tracks and the disses that NWA essentially gave to Dre when he left the group. So you'll remember watching the NWA movie that once Dre broke off, he was like, man, I'm not with it. He felt that Easy wasn't paying them and that type of thing. So when he breaks off and he shops his deal or whatever happens, late 80s, I guess early 90s technically, he lands with Death Row, as we talked about. And this was, I mean, arguably, and I think if you look at like top 10 lists, it definitely is one of the top diss tracks of all time. The one thing that I'll say about this one is it really, including the video, it really has like a party type, you can vibe to it. Like you could still put it on in a house party today and people are going to be like, throwing their hands in the air, they got their 40s and that type of thing. It really is a classic video, but essentially, they've got the portrayal of Eazy-E in there and that type of thing. So it's really a track that I think has stood the test of time from a diss track. It's 4 minutes and 52 seconds. Now, the first verse is Dre. The second verse is Snoop Dogg. You got to interlude with RBX. The third verse is Snoop Dogg, of course, and then Dre. And then you got the outro, which is Snoop. The outro vocals is Jewel. And she was an artist that was on Death Row at the time. It features Atomic Dog by George Clinton, Not Just Knee Deep by Funkadelic, and some others in there like The Big Bang Theory from Aqua Boogie. So what you'll find throughout this album is there's a heavy amount of samples that Dre used from what he loved, in the 70s with Parliament and things such as that, Ohio Players on that on the intro and things like that. A lot of tracks that, to be honest with you, until I did some research, I really didn't know a lot of that music. I hate to say it, because the era that I grew up in, my parents were listening to like rock and roll and things like that. They weren't really into the Funkadelic, Parliament, and things like that. So, pretty cool stuff. Now, the next track that we're going to ride into is arguably one of my favorite tracks, and we'll talk about like a top three list later, but this track, I could play it every single day I wake up.
Creeping down the back street on D's, I got my Glock cock cause niggas want these. No sooner as I said it, seems I got sweated by some nigga with a Tech 9 trying to take mine. You wanna make noise, make noise.
Whether you got the homies in the car and the G-Ride, if you got Christina and our Caddy Queen who we just had on, if she's rolling out in her coupe, it doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter what car you got, new school, old school. If you got a mini truck, you got a full size, this track right here is the shiznit. So right there, Let Me Ride. And this is Dr. Dre, RBX, and Snoop. The verses, of course, Dr. Dre, you got a little bit from Snoop in there, and you got the vocals from Ruben and Jewel. So this one samples Mothership Connection, Star Child, Swing Down, Sweet Chariot Stop. Of course, that was the live version by Parliament. Kissing My Love, Drums by Bill Withers, and Funky Drummer, Drums by James Brown. And you're hearing me say all that, and you're going, I just like to listen to music. Well, I tell you what, same thing for me, but I can appreciate the work ethic that went into this album. It just gives me chills to think that 25 years later we're still talking about it. And it really, in hip-hop, not just hip-hop, but in music in general, you have some of these magnum opus albums by artists, and this one is definitely Dr. Dre's, man. So I can definitely ride out to this track all the time. One of the other things that I like is, we'll talk a little bit about Daz and Corrupt and Snoop and some of these guys that kind of came from that whole Death Row era, right? And they spawned their own careers. But when I look at a lot of the music collection that I have, DPG or Dog Pound, they essentially were, you know, spawned from Death Row as well. So one of the really badass albums that I have, it's kind of rare. I don't know that it was ever an official release, which is called DPG Presents the Remix LP. And it has a really, really badass, I think I've used it on the podcast before. It has a real nice mix of Let Me Ride on it. So, again, I think this track arguably is one of the best on the album. I think it's kind of underrated. Now, from a vehicle perspective, you'll have to go on YouTube, watch the Let Me Ride video. It really had the same vibe to it as Nothing But a G Thing. It had that California feel. It had the hydraulics. It had the Impalas. It had the wire wheels. It had the block party feel. You had the one scene in there where the homie's smoking. It really captures, again, the same West Coast flow. It's got that awesome beat to it. It's definitely a badass track. And, you know, once I get my Lincoln going that we talked about on the last episode, I'm going to just ride out to this, man. I mean, it truly is one of my favorite songs ever produced. Now, the song also won Dr. Dre the Best Rap Solo Performance at the 94 Grammy Awards. So, you know, to think about it from a Grammy perspective, I mean, you watch that video today and you're like, damn, man, you know, he was pretty gangster and, you know, he had that feel on that West Coast, but man, he showed up, boom, 94 Grammys, he took home the award. So this track, if you don't listen to it at least a couple times a month or anytime you're cruising with the homies or the chicks, you definitely got to, because I'm telling you right now, man, that track is the best. I'm telling you straight up. Next, we're going to roll into, and I'm going to edit some of these words, right? You guys know. But the day the homies took over.
And I'm going to say this and I'm going to end mine. All of y'all that box, if you ain't down for the Africans here in the United States, right, period, point blank, if you ain't down for the ones that suffered in South Africa from apartheid and shit, damn it, you need to step your punk ass to the side and let us brothers and us Africans step in and start putting some foot in that ass.
So, this track obviously is, you know, tied into the LA riots and things like that that happened after the Rodney King verdict. So, you know, you had the Rodney King deal, then you had the police officers that we heard about, like in Ice Cube's Predator album, Stacey Coon, I forget all their names and whatnot. But this track essentially is kind of a rising up of the community there, however which way you want to look at it. And, you know, talking about breaking them off some and getting a little crazy out there. Daz, you know, talks about, dumb wonder why me violent and no really understand for the reason why we take me law in my own hand. Now, what's crazy is when I listen to that track, I'm a Daz fan. He almost sounds like he's like Jamaican in that track. But that song was recorded in 92 at Solar Studios. And Bernie Grundman's mastering, as I mentioned earlier. It was written by DOC, RBX, and Daz. So we'll talk a little bit about RBX, because when he left Death Row, he kind of made a diss track against them. He didn't feel like he got all the credit that was due. But, you know, that track is it's a pretty cool track. I still like it. You know, there's some funny parts in it, actually, that I kind of laugh at, even all these years later. There's one where he goes, this is Dre later in the track. I got a VCR in the back of my car that I ganked from the Slauson swap meet, and mother effers better not try to stop me. So, of course, knowing how truly gangster Dre is, you know, obviously there was some ghostwriting going on there. But, you know, thinking about how dated the track is, talking about a VCR in the back of his car, but really it had that feel to it, man. And it was like, hey, they were rising up, and that was what was going on. Whether you agree with it or not, I remember being a young dude middle school watching that stuff on TV. My eyes are like, man, what the hell is going on? But they were kind of block reporters, you know? And then there's a sample in there of KRS-One saying, got myself an Uzi and my brother a nine, a real famous track or verse there, or lyrics, I should say. Later on in the verse 3, RBX says, I ain't Nintendo, I'm high off the endo. So, you know, little crazy thing there. Obviously, the Nintendo, the NES was popping off back then. Even the gangsters knew what Nintendo was about. So kind of a cool track. Again, for some people that don't like, you know, the very opening, I can understand, you know, it gets a little crazy there, you know, when the protester, and if you look up the video, you can find it. The protester audio is what they used for that intro where he's saying, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to end mine. If you ain't down for the Africans here in the United States, period, point blank, if you ain't down for the ones, blah, 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 blah. So that literally is from the riots. But I know some people don't like that part, so they don't really listen to this track, and maybe it's not you know, maybe it's not listened to as much as other tracks on the album. But kind of going to speed up a little bit through some of these. I did want to mention that that song is also featured on the 94 movie soundtrack Natural Born Killer. So for anyone that owns that soundtrack. So next, no intro needed.
One, two, bringing to the folks. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance, so back on up,
cause you know we're about to rip shit up.
Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Too low
what?
Death niggas,
right,
so we crazy.
Death Row so is the label that like pays back. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you're in trouble. What a, just a classic, laid-back, West Coast feel. It didn't matter if you were in Florida, Maine, Alaska, Hawaii, Cali, Mexico, worldwide. It does not matter. That track, I think, is going to go down in history as one of the baddest tracks ever. You know, of course, Snoop was introduced, as many of you know, on Deep Cover soundtrack. So he had 187 on a cop, which was a real, not saying I agree with that, those lyrics, but early in the 90s, they had that opportunity, and that's when he was introduced. And then this was really his coming out. Really laid back, and especially when you watch the video, I mean, Snoop just has that, you know, that swagger, dude, man, that he just doesn't give a you-know-what. So, really classic. It's the lead single off Dr. Dre's solo album that we're talking about. It reached number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100, and it was selected by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as one of the top 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. And it's funny to think that hip-hop is rock and roll, or, you know, NWA's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now, but that's the way it goes, man. Rock and roll is you know, it's a way of life. So, I mean, it's just a badass track. According to Colin Wolf, a bassist who worked with Dre during the recording of The Chronic, Dre directed the video himself, and Wolf went on to explain that Dre had kind of an affinity for movies. And that's important because I think later on when we talk in another episode, when we talk about Murder Was the Case, that Snoop album that came out, you know, they did a short video that was, I don't know, 16, 20 minutes. Dre always liked to be behind the lens and that type of thing. I mean, there's so much to talk about on this track. I'll say if you haven't seen The Defiant Ones on HBO, make sure you watch it. They actually show a little bit of footage, raw footage from the photo shoot or the video shoot for the video. And it's a couple different angles and that type of thing. But to think back to 91, 92, you know, 93, when they filmed the video, you know, they probably had these big old video cameras. They really captured, you know, they got the volleyball, the one scene where the chick, I think someone rips her top down, and they're playing volleyball. And it's just like a hood day, and everything is good. Barbecuing up, you got the rides, the homies, you know, there's no issues, you know, so it really kind of sums up, you know, a badass day in Cali back in the day, and hell, probably now. But verse 3, when Snoop goes, falling back on that ass with a hellified gangsta lean, getting funky on the mic like an old batch of collard greens, and I could never get the next verse down. The homie 3J's, John Job, we grew up together, and he remembers hundreds of songs. I can't even do some lyrics, but this the next part when he says it's the capital S O yes, I'm fresh, N double O P D O double G Y D O double G U C. That's the best I'm ever going to do with that. And I'm looking at the lyrics right now. So for full transparency, I can't say that part. But really, again, badass track. It features I Want to Do Something Freaky to You by Leon Haywood and Uphill, Peace of Mind by Frederick Knight. 3 minutes and 58 seconds. I think we all agree, whether, again, you're an Impala, Lincoln, a Caddy, it does not matter. That track right there is awesome. I do love the piece, like at the very end of verse 4 when Dre says, like my homie D.O.C., no one can do it better. And he's given the nod, which D.O.C. is in the video. Of course, D.O.C. had the album No One Can Do It Better, and you know he was kind of his right-hand man. D.O.C. ended up being in a car accident, and his voice got real messed up. But he really is intricate in the whole West Coast rising of the music. So next, this one's going to be a little quicker. This may not be your favorite track, but I guarantee you many of you have gotten your homies with one of these right here.
Let me call this old bitch. No. Take this bitch down.
You think it has anything to do with Ed's disappearance? Yeah, go ahead.
My investigator call this bitch. Right now.
He said he thinks she's Stokes is making a reservation at a motel there.
Hello?
What's up?
Nothing. What you doing?
Man, I'm just kicking it.
Mason, are y'all good? Thank
you. Nah, what you gonna do today?
For destroying that letter. Take out my clothes.
I didn't destroy the letter.
I ain't gonna get my nails done.
See.
Why, what's up?
Hey, did what's your name get at you yesterday?
Who?
These nuts.
Aw, shut up, nigga.
But I wanna ask you one question. If I had some nuts hanging on the walls, what would I have, honey? I just, darling, you have some walnuts. She said, well, daddy, if I had some nuts.
So that's the part that I always like, but the track rides out from there. Obviously, once the bass line kicks in, you got Warren G, the young Warren G. He was also in the Nothing But a G Thing video. He calls, you know, a woman, and you got the dial tone. I mean, real clear, awesome production on the track. And then, of course, he's got the D's nuts. My homies and I, we always joke around with each other, and sometimes, you know, they'll get me with one of those. Sometimes, more than not, I'll get them with one of those. But it's a classic track. It samples Chestnuts by Rudy Ray Moore, and it features all three members of their original group, which was 213. You had Warren G in the intro, Snoop Doggy Dogg in the interludes, and then Nate Dogg in the outro on his first and only appearance, by the way, on that album, which was Nate. Which is crazy because Nate is the man, and, you know, rest in peace to him. So, you know, really, you got Daz towards the end. Diggity Daz out the cut with some shit that I wrote with my homie DRE. You know I must be dope. So, you know, a lot of times you guys hear me say Miggity Mike the Mayor. I kind of get some of those little innuendos and things like that from music that I love and listen to way more than I should. But Diggity Daz, you know, Miggity Mike, you see where it comes from. You see where the flavor that I'm kicking. What's also notable is Daz in that same verse says, not from Chris Cross, but they call me Mac Daddy. Had he not known about the city that I'm from, Long Beach, tic-tac, grab your gat, watch your back. But what's funny is Chris Cross, right? So they had grown to this unbelievable, momentum, if you will, with the whole jump. And, you know, that was in Atlanta. And what's funny because Daz lives in Atlanta, and I think he's always had property around there, and he's been really posting a lot about Atlanta. He's been hanging out with some homies over there from Goody Mob and that type of thing. But that's where, you know, Jermaine Dupri was So Def. And Chris Cross and them, you know, he found them in that Atlanta mall, and the rest was history. You may not be a Chris Cross fan, but you know some of those songs, I Miss the Bus, Jump, you know, so on and so forth. But really, really badass track. Next, arguably one of my favorite tracks on the entire album.
Wake up, jumped out my bed. I'm in a two-man cell with my homie Lil Half Dead. Murder was the case that they gave me. Dear God, I wonder can you save me?
That track all the time gives me chills. What's crazy is it was almost like Snoop was talking about, dear, you know, murder was the case that they gave me. And then remember, a few years later, he did get the murder charge. And, you know, he fought it. Of course, then, you know, he beat it. Then he had the whole Murder Was the Case track that was on his album. Then they did the remix that was even better. Then they did the short film. And then, of course, you know, Tupac signed. And from there, it was two of America's Most Wanted. So it's crazy how that one verse, that one line in that opening verse could spawn all kinds of other things down the road. But really, it's a badass track. I love the track. You know, he's talking about waking up. You know, he's in a cell, and his whole life's in front of him, man. And he's talking about, it's a riot. If I don't scrap, I'm going to get stuck. So, you know, he's got to fight to survive. This track was also written by the DOC, Dre and Snoop. Now, I also like towards the end or the second verse when Dre says, "Now I'm holding the dub, sitting on swole, 27 years old, up for parole, stroll. I'm back up on my feet with my mind on my money that I'll be making as soon as I touch the streets." You know, just talking about, man, dude, being a young black male, locked up, you're just trying to think, you know, you're just, you know, you're young, and you're just like, man, I want to get back out there, start making some money, you know what I mean? Then he talks a little bit later about the little homies from the hood with the grip are the ones I get because I'm down to set trip. And then he's like, I'm talking about I'm bigger than you, so what you going to do? And then he didn't know he had a 22. So just really awesome imagery throughout this track. Snoop kind of ends his third verse with something for the real OGs to get with. Some facts made are made. Now you want to run a play like every single day, really dough. So I've got no flow. You guys have already picked up on that. But just a track that, man, to me, just paints imagery. One of the notable things is it's 5 minutes and 29 seconds. And as I look through the album here, that's the longest track on the album. Yeah, D's Nuts, which we just listened to, that was 5:06. So, you know, this track is just boom. You just let it ride and just let it ride. That's all you can do. So you know what I'm saying. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment, a quick break, and just give a huge shout out to Sparkles Detail. Make sure you tell Tim and Tanya via your purchase on sparklesdetail.com that Our Lifestyle, the podcast, sent you. Also, want to give a huge shout out to Greg Miller. We're going to be having an upcoming cruise to Orange Beach Invasion in March. And then also we'll be talking about Scraping the Coast 2018 and putting together a cruise to that show. Those two shows for 2018 are do not miss. So make sure you look him up on Facebook or Instagram. On Instagram, he has one overarching page, which is Scraping the Coast Show. On Facebook, you can just search Orange Beach Invasion, or you can look up Scraping the Coast, S-C-R-A-P-I-N, the Coast, three words. Tell them ODB and the Mayor sent you. So next up on the album is track number 8, A Homie with a Gun. This one is one of the only tracks where Dre does all the verses. Of course, Snoop and DOC are also credited with writing this track. And all throughout it, there's tons of talk about, you know, 44 reasons come to mind. He talks about guns through the whole track. Of course, you got Dre on verse 3 says, "I break them off, but I ain't speaking about between the thighs. I'm talking about cocking and gauge in between your eyes." So obviously that one's ghostwritten there. Definitely a good song on the album. And this one features Johnny Hammond Smith's Big Sur Suite, which is sampled from a 1974 album. And as I mentioned, it is one of the few songs where Dre is performing all the verses on it. Next, you got Rat-a-tat-tat featuring DOC and Snoop Dogg.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize
as well as RBX, who we mentioned earlier. Now this track starts out with a little bit of wisdom, talking about you really don't understand, do you? Hey man, don't you realize that in order for us to make this thing work, we got to get rid of all the pimps, the pushes, and the prostitutes, and then start all over clean again. And then at the end, it goes, you crazy? But Dre starts out, you know, rapping, talking about later on, he's hanging out, rolling in his 6-foe, 16 switches for the homies in the hood, 17 shells, so I make it understood. So he's kind of reasserting his street cred there. Later in the track, you have Dre starts out verse 2, creeping and I'm peeping. We can get with these, the chronic slanging. You know, so again, just talking about hanging out, doing the damn thing. And then later on, you got Dre and Snoop on the hook. And I never hesitate to put a homie on his back, rat-a-tat-tat, like that. So it is one of those songs on the album that is definitely classic. Now, you'll hear on this next track from the homie in a little while, we briefly mentioned the $20 sack pyramid. Of course, this is a play off of the $20,000 pyramid, which was a huge hit show in the 80s. My mom watched it. I watched it pretty much because she was watching it. And it features DOC. It's one of the iconic skits, if you will.
Oh shit, what the fuck is this?
It's pretty damn funny as well, and you can, of course, hear the DOC with his voice, and that was after the accident, the car accident that he had, and his voice was essentially altered, and you hear that very clear in that track. This one features Papa Was Two, and that was a live version by Joe Tex. Next, you got Lyrical Gangbang.
High volume, preferably in a residential area.
This has Corrupt, RBX, The Lady of Rage, a.k.a. Rage, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, DOC. Definitely an awesome track. This one's a little over 4 minutes. It features Damn by the Nightlighters, When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin, Played Like a Piano by King T, and then Hole in the Head by Cypress Hill. So the first verse, Lady of Rage, then you got Corrupt, and then you got RBX. Definitely an awesome album. Continued through this episode to talk a little bit about all the different artists that came out of this album. And, you know, later on, we saw the Lady of Rage. She had an album, Corrupt, obviously, with Dog Pound. He's had much success. And then RBX, he ended up leaving Death Row a little bit later on. But definitely a classic track there. What I really like with this track is Lady of Rage. She's definitely smooth on this one. You know, we'll hear her, of course, on Doggy Style. Then she has her own album. And she recently did a song with MC8. So she continues, although she took a long break, she does continue to put out music here and there, verses, if you will. Corrupt, obviously awesome MC. And, you know, he gets pretty lyrical on this one, rhyming some different words. A little vulgar if you listen through some of the things he's saying. And then you got the interlude, as I mentioned, with Be Real from Cypress Hill, that sample. And then you got RBX, back in the days, homies, they used to scrap. But now in 92, homies, they pull their strap. Pretty awesome verse there. And he ends it with Audi like 5 G's. Lyrical gangbang, but it's just a G thing. So pretty awesome ending there to that track. Next, you got High Powered.
Yo, what's up? Yo, man, give me some of that old gangster ass shit, you know what I'm saying? Some shit I can just kick back, smoke a fat ass joint to, you know what I'm saying? Hell yeah.
This one's featuring RBX, and it has a little bit of a smooth intro, and it comes into this awesome bass line. It's really a track, I think, that's a little underrated on the album, but true fans know. It's the 12th track on the album. Dre starts with a spoken intro, followed by RBX, of course, and then the homie Daz. And man, when RBX does his verses, when he talks about 7 execution-style murders, I have no remorse because I'm a fucking murderer. I mean, it's definitely some dark shit, but It's an awesome track. Next, you got The Doctor's Office, and I think we joked around with the homie on this one, Amir, and you'll hear from that interview here shortly. But this one's just a quick little skit, if you will. I mean, we still hear skits on albums, but it was definitely really big in the 90s. And on this one, you've got Kevin Lewis's feature, Jewel and Rage. And Dre's just getting his thing going. Not really much to talk about there on that track. Probably the one that I would skip the most as I'm going through an album. I can let it play through. You know, any classic album, you just let it play. But that one's just kind of like, okay, yeah, I don't want to hear him doing that. So, next track. But, of course, he is the doctor. Yes, you know what I mean? Yes. So, that was his patient in that one. All right, now you got track 14.
Yes.
Yo, I'm in the house now for sure. Because I want to talk about the hearts of men. Who knows what evil lurks within them. But let's take a travel down the blind side and see what we find down this path called
Stranded on death row. So duck when I swing my shit. I get rugged like raw head wrecked with fat tracks that fits the gangster type. When I recite, kinda lethal. Niggas know the flow that I kick.
Stranded on death row. It definitely classic here. This is the one where Bushwick Bill is featured on the intro. He says, yes, it is I, say me. And all who agree are more than three, because they we. Yes, yo, I'm in the house now for sure, because I want to talk about hearts of men. You know what evil lurks within them. And, you know, Bushwick Bill's got his little play on words there. This definitely is a track that I play all the time. It features Corrupt, RBX again, and Snoop Dogg. RBX has got another awesome verse in this one, No Prevention from the Lynching of Sorts. And then Lady of Rage also appears. She talks about lyrical murderer stranded on death row, and now I'm serving a lifetime sentence. So a little play on words to the whole death row name of the record label. Also, this one was featured, if I remember correctly, on the Death Row Greatest Hits, which came out, was a double disc that came out in 96. This one features Do Your Thing Live by Isaac Hayes. If It Don't Turn You On, You Gotta Leave It Alone by BT Express. In The Jam by Graham Central Station. It's about a 5-minute track and definitely one of the classics on the album. You got Bushwick Bill, he also does the outro. And on Snoop's verse, he starts out, "Hey yo, stepping through the fog and I'm creeping through the smog. It's the number one homie from the hood, doggy dog. Making videos, now I stay in Hollywood. Busting raps for my snaps. Now they call me Eastwood." So definitely another awesome flow from Snoop. And we continue to hear that more on Doggy Style, that kind of the wordplay. Now you've got The Roach, and this is the official Chronic outro.
Cannabis sativa, or in the heart of LA known as the Chronic. Not to be confused with the Bionic, even though it does cost $6 million, man. Understand? Now we working with some new improved shit on this track. Nevertheless, not no stress, sucker ass niggas.
It's about 4 minutes and 37 seconds. You've got RBX, Lady of Rage, and Daz, of course. This one features P-Funk, Wants to Get You Funked Up, Color Me Funky by Parliament. Impeach the President again, which is the drums by the Honey Dippers. You heard me say that earlier, or excuse me, the Honey Drippers. You heard me say that earlier. Now, this track is on some smooth stuff starting out, and it just continues, and it just has that kind of flavor. Again, awesome outro. Now, when we talk to Amir in a little while, and you'll hear this interview, this is a piece, the last track, Bitches Ain't Shit. That track, you'll hear where he talks about the different pressings of the album in terms of the artwork, and that's where there was a misprint, if you will, on the back of the album. Again, this is something that I think I've noticed over the years, but I never really picked up on the fact that, oh yeah, there was one that had, you know, that listed on the back, and then there was one that didn't. I only have one copy of the album, and I need to take mine out, you know, to take a look and see which one I have, but I think mine's an original, you know, early 90s. I had... I think the tape cassette single to G Thang, but I never had the actual cassette to that album. I think I just got the CD and that's all I had. Now, Bitches Ain't Shit features Dr. Dre, Colin Wolf, Snoop Dogg, DOC, Corrupt, and Daz, all kind of mixed in there. And this one features Adolescent Funk by Funkadelic and Let's Get Small by Trouble Funk. Almost a 5-minute track.
Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks.
And of course, Snoop's really saying all kinds of, you know, pimpalicious, crazy stuff through that whole entire track. So, you know, really, what an album. I mean, if you think back to the early 90s, I mean, this is what it was about. But, you know, you heard me kind of go through, and I think I skipped a couple there in the middle of some of the features. Like there was Back in Bed by Jewel on The Doctor's Office on track 12, High Powered. You have Buffalo Gals by Malcolm McLaren. And then, you know, you had a couple others in there that I think I hit on. But when you look at this album from a 16-track perspective, I mean, it's really gold. It really captures as Dre was leaving out of the NWA era and he was kind of doing his own thing. After this album, you had Dog Food by DPG, which is executive produced by Dre. Really another awesome album. I mean, so many hits started coming out, and this one really laid the foundation for Death Row. We could almost do a podcast episode on a lot of different albums from Death Row, including Doggy Style, Dog Food, Above the Rim soundtrack, which is one of the best hip-hop soundtracks ever. You know, Lady of Rage eventually dropped her album. You had The Best Of. Of course, you had Tupac, All Eyes on Me. So many. And, you know, and maybe we will. We'll see how this episode resonates with everyone. But definitely hope that you enjoyed some of these fun facts. Again, definitely, if you start Googling around, you'll see there's a lot of different facts out there that you may or may not have known about. And I'll say this, I hope that you enjoyed listening to this episode. Next, we're going to hear from Amir, and he's a little bit younger cat than I am. He definitely knows his stuff when it comes to music. He's a true collector, and I hope that you enjoy this interview. This episode is definitely going to be one that we may lay the foundation and do other episodes like it. So let us know, as Ronnie from C10 Talk would say, rate and review us. So go to iTunes on your computer and leave a rating. Hopefully it's 5 stars. And, you know, put your name in there. We'll give you a shout out. I just want to say it's ODB, episode 48. We out here. Peace. Dr. Dre, The Chronic. Late. Yo, 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 yo. It's Our Lifestyle, the podcast, episode 48, coming at you. And this one's a special one, as I alluded with the intro. This is episode 48, but it's titled The Chronic. And we're actually paying homage to, as I mentioned, 25th anniversary, one of the greatest hip hop albums of all time. And I'd like to welcome a special guest. We've got Amir Rahimi to the podcast. Now, I met Amir on Instagram, and you can follow him. It's AmirRahimi7. Amir is a guy that basically does some super sick posts as it relates to music and his collection. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first off, Amir, how's it going, man?
Hey, good, good. How you doing, man?
Good, good. I know we kind of exchanged some posts back and forth a little bit on Instagram, but dude, you got 20,000 followers almost. You're kind of getting up there. Really, really badass collection, but we're going to focus a lot on The Chronic on this episode. So you recently had a pretty cool post, and it was a little fact, and we'll talk about it, but when you think of Dr. Dre, The Chronic album, I know you're a fan of it, and you're a lot younger than I am, but what do you think is, like, why has that album stood the test of time even 25 years later?
Man, yeah, big fan. It's incredible. Well, it stood the test of time. Just the sound of it, it was so monumental. It changed an entire genre, really. You know, you got people, you know, at the time, the East Coast had its own sound, the West Coast was emerging, it had its own sound. The G-Funk really kind of helped separate, you know, especially give the West Coast more of a name. And you saw people from both coasts really changing their styles, and even the South took on some G-Funk element as well. So obviously, you know, to some people, they would think The Chronic was the first G-Funk album, whereas other people would understand that Above the Law really helped with that sound. Actually, they basically started it with, you know, their album Black Mafia Life and their EP as well, Vocally Pimpin'. A lot of people credit Dre, but Dre was actually not the first to use it, but The Chronic was the one that really put it out there for the mainstream. So definitely changed the culture, stood the test of time, just with tracks like Nothing But a G Thing, Let Me Ride, you know, Fuck With Dre Day, the singles. But the whole album is fantastic, with the exception of probably, you know, Doctor's Office.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, but what can you say about that? It's just Dre busting a nut like he did on 2001 with, what was that other song he did? Pause for Porno.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Sometimes you're like, you kind of scratch your head and you're like, okay, he had to throw a bone in there. Whereas, like, you know, some movies are, every shot is perfect, and then the director's like, oh, we had this one shot that was out of focus, and they like almost do it on purpose, you know. But it's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny that you talk about Above the Law, because to your point, they did, you know, they were kind of like the true godfathers of it, if you will. It almost reminds me, because I'm a big tech guy, and all of us use smartphones, and a lot of people, I'll kind of bake this in, is a lot of people will say, you know, Apple isn't first to market with something, right? So, you know, they'll have Face ID, and then, you know, the Android fans will say, well, Samsung's had that out, or Google or Android's had that out longer. But of course, you know, Apple tries to kind of perfect it. And that's what I always thought about Dre, is, you know, even though he maybe didn't start the G-Funk, it was like he kind of perfected it. And then from there, you had all these culmination of all these other albums. And we can talk a little bit about those as well. But yeah, what's crazy is, I mentioned Amir is a lot, you know, I just turned 39 on Thanksgiving. Amir's a lot younger than I am. Now, showing my age, I was in middle school when that album dropped. And what blew my mind, Amir, is I live in Tampa, Florida, just north of there. And even back then, MTV was, I mean, it was popping off. You know, you had Coolio playing, you had Cypress Hill, you had The Chronic. I mean, these were on repeat a lot, you know, multiple times per hour. What kind of blew my mind is, because of MTV, you know, we were wearing the hats with The Chronic leaves on them. We were watching the video. We were just like, oh, snap. So it's crazy how influential it was, even on the East Coast, you know?
Well, interesting you see it from Tampa. So let me ask you a question. How did you feel about Dre dissing your boy after your boy dissed him, or, you know, Luke?
I know, right? So that was pretty crazy. Yeah, back in the day, because 2 Live Crew was so big in Miami. And it was really weird. Like, I think I was at an age where, like, I didn't understand that beef. Like, I was like, okay, wait, why was he talking shit about Luke? But it was funny, because to your point, there was multiple, right? You had Tim Dog, you had that, you had the Easy, I mean, so many little disses going on. But yeah, I think if it happened in today's environment, people would be like, oh, snap, you're not messing with Florida. You know, if it was like Rick Ross and Dre or something. But back then, we didn't really get it, I don't think.
Got it.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, it was way more minor compared to what followed with Eazy-E and Ruthless.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And what's funny is, when I think back to the Dre Day video, like even Bushwick Bill being in that video, and then he was on one of the tracks. Like, I was going through the track list the other day, and I was like, oh, snap. You know, and I remembered Bushwick was on there. One of my buddies is a big Houston fan with Ghetto Boys and everything, but like Stranded on Death Row. It was kind of, I always thought that was crazy how he even, you know, showed up on the album, you know?
Yeah, there was actually a story behind that. I kind of forget the story, so I'm not going to waste any time trying to remember, but it was an interesting story with Bushwick being on it. And it's funny how he, you know, from the Ghetto Boys, being from Texas, and even on 2001, you know, Dre had a Devin the Dude on his album.
Yes.
So Texas has been on two of those albums, and I thought that was quite interesting, because Dre typically just keeps it within, you know, whether it was the Death Row camp or the Aftermath camp or some up-and-coming artists who also didn't have Shine yet, who he didn't create at the moment.
Yep.
You know, he had 6-2 on there. He had, or on 2001, I should say 6-2. He had Hitman, these more unknown artists. And then he had the artists who he helped create, you know, the Snoop Dogs, the Eminems. So, yeah, I think he, man, we can talk about Dre all day. But The Chronic was, And talking about video cameos, when you're talking about Bushwick Bill, my favorite cameo in his videos had to be Ice Cube. You know,
I being knew
my
you favorite were going to say that.
Hip hop artist, seeing Ice Cube, especially after the whole No Vaseline thing, Cube wanting, you know, Dre to help with America's Most, and then them dissing each other, and then to see Cube with the afro coming out the, I think he came out the ladies' room or maybe the men's room, I don't remember.
Damn right, it was
with
a good
the afro.
Day.
Yeah, exactly, with that corny ass line.
Yep.
But it showed that, you know, they're gonna work in the future. So that was definitely, I'm sure, '92. You know, I was just a baby at the time, but I'm sure the people at the time we're just going crazy. If there was Twitter at that time, that would be like the number one hashtag trending topic, you know, Ice Cube, Dr. Dre.
Hell yeah.
That video dropped.
And what's funny is I'll have to tell the story because you kind of tied it in. My buddy, my homie, Johnny J, John Job, and I, when we would go to like Specs back in the day, they had this like machine. It was like before, you know, even really before I think I even had a home computer, because that was more like towards the late 90s that we got a freaking computer. But we would go to the machine and it had release dates on there. And for the most part, like, I don't know how they would upload it, you know, again, before the internet. But we used to always go in there and we would type in Helter Skelter. Because, you know, after that time, you know, obviously a couple years passed. But then Dre and Cube were going to do that album. And we like obsessed over it. Like anytime there was like a little blurb in Rolling Stone magazine or The Source, we're like, oh crap, you know, it's coming out. And like a lot of Dre projects, you know, we kind of held our breath for a long time. But how badass would that have been, man?
Oh yeah. And I, what was it? Was it Help? Was Doggy Style? Was Helter Skelter ads in Doggy Style as well? I feel like it was. And man, I'm pretty sure. I actually have a CD near me, so I can literally just look it up. But
nice.
I can just imagine people just going through Doggy Style, which went multi-platinum, being like, oh shit,
yeah,
this Helter Skelter thing is real.
Hell,
you know,
yeah.
Was it Doggy Style?
And we got,
yep,
that.
Yep, it is. It's Doggy Style. It's,
yeah,
in here.
Yep, yep. Yeah. And I was going to say, I bought the album the day it came out, and it was one of the, when Snoop came out with Doggy Style, it was one of those albums like everybody was just waiting for it. And then we put it in, and like I remember I had, back then I didn't even have a CD player. I had a portable CD player, I should say. And we had, back when they called them, you know, headphones or earphones, those corny little things with the styrofoam on or whatever on them. And that's literally how I listened to that album, like on repeat, because a lot of the, up until then, I had a lot of tapes. So like the Predator and Death Certificate, things like that. It was like the tapes were, you know, you'd wear them out. So, but yeah, definitely, man. And one other thing from the Helter Skelter name, a lot of West Coast fans will know that, you know, the DOC has been boys with Dre for a long time, and they've had their falling out, you know, a little bit here and there, and they've been, you know, friends, almost like brothers. But, you know, later on, DOC released an album titled Helter Skelter, and it kind of was like a, I think it was a jab to Dre a little bit, and you know, I think Dre was pretty pissed, but you know, that was something that I always thought was kind of crazy.
Yep, it's true, it is, and definitely even worse than that was just the fact that, you know, Cube and Dre didn't release Helter Skelter. That's out of all the albums that you hear buzzes about, even more than Detox for me, more than, you know, Jay and Biggie with Commission, and, you know, all these other potential albums that could have happened, you know, Tupac and Boot Camp Click, you know, I still honestly think that Helter Skelter is the one album that I would really just want out of all those potentials. That's the one album that I wanted, because that's Dre and that's Cube in his last prime years, and then my favorite producer, my favorite rapper, I'd be foolish to choose anything else, you know, and it couldn't happen. It's sad.
yeah, I know. And you and I, we're both huge Cube fans. And one other thing to note is what really added fuel to the fire. And I know we're kind of getting off topic with the Chronic, but when they put out Natural Born Killers on the Murder Was the Case soundtrack, I mean, dude, that was, the video was fire. You know, Dre, not only did the CD come out, but then they had like that short 15, 18, 20 minute video that they put out on VHS back then. It was, that track, we're like, dang. And then if you may recall, at the very end of that, they show Tupac makes a quick cameo, and he's got like this big scope, and they cut away and we're just like, oh snap. And that was like right when he had gotten out. And I mean, it just, it was awesome times to really be tied into the, you know, to the West Coast or to any music back then, you know?
I agree. Yep. The Tupac cameo, the Dre and what was it, Ice Cube on like those revolving chairs, yeah, on the skulls, or if my memory served me correctly. Yeah, that was some time, you know. Death Row really,
yeah, they were killing it.
They really fucked that up, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, they had a few year great stride and they just messed that up. So
yep,
it is what it is. Yeah. But yeah, let's get back to the Chronic. We can talk hip hop all day, man. It's,
hell yeah. So
all day. Got to get back to the Chronic. I feel bad. Keep changing it up.
No, it's all good. So when you think of the Chronic album, I know like the first song that comes to mind, you know, everybody, there's one song that comes to mind, but what were some of either your favorite tracks or maybe some of the highlights that you like on the album?
My favorite song, it kind of goes between two of them. Doesn't mean they're the songs that I play when I first show someone the Chronic, just my personal favorites when I'm alone or whatever, if I'm cruising. I think D's Nuts is my favorite, man. I love how unique the intro is. What is that? Is that Warren G on the intro? Yes, Warren G on the intro talking to some girl, you know, giving a clever joke, whatever. Exactly. Then you got the sample or what have you, the person talking about the chestnuts and the nothing chin and all that, whatever. And then the cherry on top is really just Nate Dogg just taking the whole thing away, man. It's just incredible. His voice, just the synth, everything about that song is remarkable. Sure, you're not going to get the most lyrical miracle like content on it, but dude, it's something you can ride out to, something you can listen to, something that everyone ultimately enjoys. The other song would probably be Let Me Ride.
Yes.
Just the intro with the whole biatch and just the way, and you mentioned, you know, cassettes and CDs and I think this is just a perfect album for the cassette. Every song goes so well into the next. The way that he starts off Let Me Ride with Biatch, it kind of just sounds like just one whole big song, you know, and then the way Let Me Ride drops off into, you know, the day the brothers took over, right? It's just, it's perfect. So I think Let Me Ride is another one that's just phenomenal. The chorus, the sample. And talk about Above the Law again, you know, Dre wasn't the first one to use that sample. Above the Law used it on Black Mafia Life, on one of their songs. The name's escaping me right now. But yeah, I think those are my two favorite songs. And definitely, if I had to choose one over the other, I'd probably have to say Let Me Ride, just because I've heard it, you know, first. But yeah, those are the two. What about you?
Well, I would say definitely we're in the same realm with both of those tracks. I definitely, my favorite is Let Me Ride. I love the video. I know Dre had won an award for that one, and it's escaping my mind. I think it was like a Grammy he won for it. But
okay.
I always love the video. There's the one scene where the guy's blowing the smoke, and the smoke, it turns, you know, there's somebody, you know, in the smoke. Obviously, I'm a huge car culture guy, and this is like the first podcast that we're not talking about cars at all, but I did want to bake it in and say, I mean, dude, cruising in the 6.3, 6.4, I mean, it really just encompassed. I love that song. It gives me goosebumps. I also, one of my other favorite songs, and I'm sure you spent some time on genius.com, you know, with the annotation, annotating, you know, lyrics and stuff, but Little Ghetto Boy. I love that song, man.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. It's a good song.
It definitely is. And I was annotating some things on there, you know, when he was talking about waked up, jumped out my bed. I'm in a two-man cell with my homie Little Half Dead. And he's just talking about murder was the case that they gave me, which was crazy because that was almost like, you know, a foresight into
prophetic.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. There's a better word. So, I mean, so many good tracks, but I re-listened to it, and you'll hear, if you listen to this entire episode, you'll hear that I kind of intro some of the songs and talk a little bit about them. But, I mean, so many good ones. And over the years, there's been a lot that have even basically made their way and leaked over the years. And I haven't followed, like, I think I've listened to each of those. But I think when I really listen, or excuse me, when I really look at the track list of the 16 tracks, it's just pure gold, man.
Yeah, no, for me, it's personally top five album for me. I'm not going to sit here and say it's better than all the other albums, as far as personal favorites, I'm going with top five. Just, you know, the production, the people who became big off it, the way that it's just really held its own, it's held its weight through all these years, and it's still mentioned. Just the advertising, even, you know, the Christmas advertisement that's been on the web, especially with Instagram now, people were posting those clips, and a lot of people who couldn't see them are now being exposed via Instagram. And yeah, that advertisement's awesome. The birth of Snoop, you know, the person with a bajillion albums, probably one of the most featured artists of all time.
I agree.
You know, just everything. And obviously he was on 187 before this album, but still, this really gave him his big, deep cover. 187 gave him his big shine on this,
Well,
it's remarkable.
It definitely is. Now, recently I saw that Mathematics from The Woo, so I love that new album. He only listened to, this is an interview or something I read, 36 Chambers in The Chronic while he was producing The Woo's latest album. So why do you think such a talented producer like Mathematics would be listening to The Chronic, especially when he was producing an East Coast album? What's your take on that?
You know, I'll tell you something. I don't, you know, I can't really answer why exactly, but I'll tell you that I've read somewhere, I believe it was Scarface.
Okay.
Scarface also said when listening to The Diary, he was listening to The Chronic. Kanye West put up there that he's listened to The Chronic when making some of his albums. You know, I think Kanye West, actually, because, you know, he worked with Mike Dean, and Mike Dean worked on, you know, Scarface music.
Yes.
So Mike Dean worked with Kanye, and it would also make sense why Kanye was also listening to The Chronic, because Mike Dean, with Scarface, you know, he was listening to The Chronic as well. So just these legendary producers are all listening to The Chronic. So, you know, I'm not a producer, so I can't really say exactly they're listening to The Chronic. But if all the greats are listening to this production masterpiece, you can only,
imagine.
Guess why.
Exactly. Okay. So I mentioned him earlier, the DOC, the talented West Coast legend DOC, better known as also known as Tracy Lynn Curry. He appears on the album, and of course he helped his close friend Dre with many aspects of different projects. But how important do you think his role was in the album, including how big the West Coast blew up after The Chronic drop?
I think he was important because he helped Dre with lyrics. Very important. He was also on the skits. What was it? Was he on $20 Sack Pyramid?
Yes.
You know, he helped write. You know, he's important. He was also Dre's boy. And, you know, he stuck with Dre through NWA's drama as well. So I'm sure there was a lot of moral support. There was a lot of help with lyrics. There was also a lot of help with ideas and brainstorming, I'm sure. There's also a lot of stuff that stays behind the scenes that you don't know that certain people inputted, you know. It just stays behind the scenes. But I'm sure the DOC's impact was much more than we can really even touch on. You know, there's definitely some stories that are behind the scenes that we probably won't know till later, until, you know, DJ Vlad interviews him, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what's
or
crazy,
someone.
Exactly. And what's crazy, like my buddy Paul, he really got me into hip hop music and West Coast music in particular, like in middle school. And, you know, he listened to his albums a lot, including his first album before his accident. But when I think of even the Snoop album, and this just came to my mind, I think it's the Blue Carpet Treatment. There's a couple tracks on there, I think like two or three that he helped with. And as soon as those tracks come on, I can say, boom, I know that he helped with those tracks, because you can just, and I've read interviews where he basically has said, you know, hey, if I'm working with Snoop, there's a certain lyric that Snoop's got to talk about. He's got to talk about certain things. And it's awesome how he can capture that. Now, you probably know, I didn't know this till recently, but I follow, of course, DOC on Twitter, but DOC is also on Instagram. I think he's been a little bit undercover on there. So for anybody that wants to check out DOC, he's on there as C period D period O period C. So like DOC Curry. But he's got a lot of family photos and stuff on there, but definitely a legend in the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. One of the – would have been such a great career if not for that accident. I'm not saying he doesn't have a great career.
Right, right.
But, you know, it could have been much, much, much greater. Unfortunately, that had to happen, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when I looked up some researching the album the other day, basically Daz Dillinger, he, if I did the math correct, he was about 18 or 19 years old when he helped on the album. And we talked about kind of all these different careers that were spawned a little bit ago. But he grew into a mega producer that's really, in my opinion, somewhat underrated. He's produced many West Coast classics. How important do you think the Chronic was for the beginning of his career in the music industry?
It's huge. It's huge. No one knew who the Dog Pound was before that.
Yep.
So his work on here was obviously good. You know, his verses were great. I think he really helped a lot with Doggy Style. Then his Dog Food album with Corrupt was, was a dope
fire.
One as well. His production. And then he stayed around for the All Eyes on Me era as well. And he produced just freaking classics. I mean, what did he produce?
Like two of America's Most Wanted.
Rider.
Yep, Ambitions as a Rider.
Oh my God. Just that was the opening to that album, All Eyes on Me. And man, that's just. And I remember, like, on Instagram a while ago, he posted, like, a royalty check he got from some of those songs. It was, like, some staggering number. I'm like, it's freaking 26, because it was before the All Eyes on Me movie that Abomination was on. And he just posted some royalty check, like, before the movie came out. It was, like, in the 100,000s. I'm like, are you kidding me? Is this real?
I know. And what's crazy is I was going to bring that up, and he has a channel, and I've kind of watched it a little bit. It's DPG Uncut on YouTube. And really, he's had a lot of cool things to say. And the one thing that I took away from that, I even tweeted it to him one time, thinking he was going to retweet it. But he basically said publishing. And you mentioned that word earlier, Amir, that with publishing, what he was so smart at a young age, like someone like Snoop or Dre or someone must have guided him to say, dude, you need to own your publishing. And he even has a quick story, and I won't go into all of it, but he talks about some, like, a beef almost that he had with DJ Mustard, where he's listening to this song and he's going, and, you know, he's a producer and he's like, that's my stuff. So he reaches out to DJ Mustard, because at the beginning it's Mustard on the beat, ho. Well, it turns out that DJ Mustard didn't even produce the song, but he sold, I guess he'll sell, you know, for however much, like he'll put Mustard on the beat, ho, in the beginning. So long story short, he was like, basically the record company didn't want to fight him, and they just gave it all, you know, I guess the royalties to Daz. But it is crazy to think, you know, how much money he's been able to make, and he can do whatever he wants to do now. That's why I think he keeps putting out albums that, you know, may not even sell a whole lot, but he just does whatever he wants to do.
Exactly. Yeah. He's completely free to do that, and you got to respect these people. You got to respect them owning their stuff, knowing to own their stuff and not just to take, you know, the back seat, you know, the passenger seat, just because they made a little money here and there and they want to flash it. You know, you have to understand that this is money that can be residual for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Money that you can see 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line. What if they want to put it in a movie? What if they want to put it in a commercial?
Boom.
And that's where the real money comes from. All that exposure, all those new fans.
Yeah, we've seen that from Eminem. We saw that from E-40. I mean, his, you know, the Warriors remix is playing on damn ESPN. I'm like, hell yeah, there's the West getting that love, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's up. Now, if I recall correctly, several years ago, Dre put out a book, and boom, I was there. I bought it. And in the book, I read that he finally got his hands on the masters for The Chronic. He basically, you know, talked about, of course, he had a falling out with Suge, but he talks about there was a dispute with Suge and Death Row management for years. Dre was trying to get him. And if I remember correctly, he did end up getting his hands on all the masters. That's big for someone like Dre or someone that produced that classic album. But what are your thoughts on Suge Knight and really his epic rise and then, of course, downfall?
As far as the masters, I actually didn't know that he got them, so that's awesome to know. That's cool. I didn't know that. So hats off to Dre, because that thing's going to sell forever.
Yeah, I know,
really,
right?
Is. It's always referenced. The cover's famous, just everything about it. And then Dr. Dre, his name is household. So as far as Suge, I mean, someone who started off as a bodyguard to then managing some rappers who he was helping defend.
Yep.
You have to really admire him for being able to do that, right? And then again, so much power, so much money goes to your head, and you create something brilliant, and then it becomes an abomination shortly after, you know, inviting gang members to studios, not just all Suge's fault,
sure.
Because, you know, certain rappers would also invite, you know, gang members as well, or, you know, just people who shouldn't even be there. They're not even freaking recording.
Yep.
But him allowing it, him with the red everything, red floors or red carpet, red promoting techniques. Like, for example, I actually just got a VHS titled Death Row Uncut.
Yes.
And even the VHS is red. Like,
yeah.
When you're really blasting that hard for all this red stuff, and then you're just putting this image out there, and you're feuding with people going to the East Coast and saying this and that, you know, creates awesome memories, awesome stuff in the history timestamp, but you're also putting your camp and yourself at risk. And this shows, you know, the bad reputation he ended up getting, and people wanting to leave the hostile environment. Even Eazy E, when he said at Death Row, I heard you're getting treated like boot camp. And that was what, in 93? That was 93. That was before shit even got really crazy. Like, really crazy. So, yeah, I respected what he did in the beginning, right? I don't know how he caught everything. I don't know how how much force he had to use. You know, some things have been put out there. But, you know, it's respect that's short-lived. I don't really respect him anymore. He's kind of crazy. But, you know, it is what it is. As a person, he's an example, not an example for good in most skills.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I think you really summed it up. I will tell you, I'm going to have to go back, because one of my buddies has the book. I'm going to have to flip back through it, because I know, I was just Googling, I know that he won the digital rights to it, and I want to double check, but I know there's a story in there, like when he's at his house, and Suge shows up uninvited, and he's got his posse with him, and they're like, they basically ring in, and I guess Dre let him in, or, you know, they did. They said, yeah, let him in. And, you know, he was kind of like, damn, what's going to go down? But I know there was a long dispute over that, because he's like, dude, I mean, he wanted the master. So I'll definitely do another round of fact checking on that one. But during HBO's The Defiant Ones, we learned a bit about the album and how it had to be, I guess what they said is shopped around about a year before it landed on Interscope for distribution. I don't know if you watch, or if you got a chance. Did you get a chance to see the Defiant Ones?
I actually saw the first two episodes, the first and second day it aired.
Yeah.
Then after that, not saying it wasn't good, because it was actually awesome. But after that, I just got very caught up in work and personal stuff that I didn't get back to it. And they're like hour episodes, so I never watch TV anyways. But I need to watch it. Probably after this, I'll watch it this week.
Yeah, yeah, no worries. I know how life is, man. It's crazy. But if what, I mean, you know, basically what they said, if it, what they're saying is true, is like the album almost sat on a shelf to be shopped for about a year. I mean, how crazy is that in your mind? Like, let's say in 91, a lot of the album was probably, you know, 91 into 92 was probably recorded. It's crazy to me that you could have such gold that just sitting on a shelf for that long. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's also very stupid considering NWA was his group before, and how much did they sell?
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, and he was one of the main faces, you know. It was him, really, Eazy-E and Ice Cube who were the main faces. Obviously, no disrespect to Yella or MC Ren. That's just the fact of the matter. So the fact that you can potentially sit an album when they had how much the success of Straight Outta Compton? What was it? How many times platinum did that go?
Yeah,
at the time, I don't know. But now it's been, you know, multi-platinum. And I'm sure their follow-up to that was also, you know, Brothers for Life, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was also multi-platinum.
Yep, it was.
So I don't know how you can put that on the shelf. It's really stupid.
That's crazy, right?
Music would have been, and you would, and that goes back to the topic where you said before, you know, people of legendary stature using it to record their new albums. You know, Mathematics with Wu, Kanye with his stuff, Mike Dean and Scarface.
Yeah,
you know, these other albums would not have followed. Potentially, they would have sounded way different.
They definitely would have, like, laid the foundation for much of the '90s. You know, since it was recorded '91, '92 ish. Now, when RBX left Death Row, he recorded a diss track, and I was just revisiting this one the other day that appeared on one of his albums. Do you think there is truth to producers and artists that they are not properly credited with work with the Chronic and other Dre's work? Because we've seen that, right? Like, there was, you mentioned Hitman earlier, you know, there was a falling out with him and Dre, and, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, I ghost wrote for this, or I, you know, I made this album. And even the DOC has talked a little bit about how he didn't get credit even for some of the NWA stuff. But Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, do you think just Dre was that shielded as a mega producer?
You know, it's a very interesting topic, you know, as far as ghost producers, ghost writers. You know, I think that, yeah, Dre is one of those producers who kind of gets more of the backlash because he's typically known as the best, you know, one of the best producers out there. So, of course, people are going to, you know, attack him just like the same way people will attack, you know,
Kobe Bryant,
Jay-Z for not writing all of his for borrowing lyrics and things like that, Bryant, you know, things like that. So yeah, I think he does get some unfair backlash, but then again, there's truth, you know. A lot of people who listen to The Chronic don't know who, you know, DJ Chris Glove is. You know, they don't know who he is when he helped with a lot. But you hear Dre shouting him out on some stuff. What was it, the B-side, Puffin' on Blunts, Drinking Tanqueray? You know, so he does give credit. And if you do look at liner notes, you'll see credit. Sometimes there's not credit. You know, I don't really know how contracts work. I don't know all the legalities to it. So people talking and judging also don't know that. But you know, what I do know is that Dre, when you have him on your song, he really enhances it. He makes that song that much better. He has his own sound depending on what era it is. You can tell that it's a Dre beat. Not as distinctive as maybe a DJ Premier beat, but distinctive nonetheless, is when you know, or when you hear a song, you kind of know Dre's touched it depending on the era. And he really makes it that much better. Honestly, he really does, in my opinion. So, a blessing and a curse, I guess. Yeah, I think some people did not get credit, but at the same time, when you build that big of a name, you can get away with certain things, and he's gotten away with it. Same with other people. Kanye West has gotten away with it. You know, I don't know if it really answered your question.
No, it did. And kind of tying into that, and you know, this is still kind of under the Chronic umbrella. When you think about, you know, we talked about the sometimes maybe he got more credit than he was due, or most of the time he didn't. You know, he got the just credit. But I always think of, we used to hear of all these artists that he signed, and we're like, oh, hell yeah. You know, Busta Rhymes was there for a minute. You know, so many other artists, and then the artist never puts out an album. Or never goes to that extra height that we thought that they were going to. And I think a lot of that has to do with, like, Dre. He'll bring you under his wing, and then if he sees that you're not a hustler, or you're not willing to stay in the studio for two or three straight days and just try to make a hit, the next thing you know, they're gone. Like the Bishop Lamonts and so many. I mean, there's really a long list, and we can
there's
almost
a lot.
Yeah, there's
a lot.
But isn't it crazy? Don't you think? I mean, it just really shows that Dre is kind of like one of those people that, like, if you cross him, or if you can't keep up, it's like you're gone.
Yeah, he's a perfectionist, hence why we never got the Detox Project. Yeah, there's a long list, some of which include Rakim, some of which include, you know, Lamont, King T, Jay-Z. There's just, who was Raekwon, one of them. You know, there's just like a lot of people. And, so, you know, some people who had recorded albums as well. You know, King T, I think it was Dre, who at the time he wasn't having a lot of success because of that Aftermath Presents project, which didn't have that, you know, much favorable reviews behind it. And then he had the King T album, you know, Thy Kingdom Come, which was shelved because of its review in The Source or one major publication regardless. So he shelved it. But King T even goes on in an interview to say, you know, I should have listened to Dre. I should have just stayed. You know, yeah, he said that's one of his biggest career regrets. So as far as him, you know, I know he regrets it, but he's had a successful career nonetheless. But as far as, you know, people like Rakim or Bishop or what have you regretting it, I don't know. But I if I was someone, I would listen to Dre because look at his track record. Look at the careers
that
he's really helped. You know, he's helped Eminem tremendously. He's helped Snoop tremendously. He's helped
the game.
Even Kendrick.
Cent. Yep, Kendrick.
50 Cent. He didn't create these people necessarily, but he really helped them.
And it goes back to that comparison I gave earlier with Apple. We know in the tech industry, Apple may not be first to market with certain things, but their methodology is, look, you know, we're going to take it and we're going to perfect it. And it's kind of like you said with 50. 50 was, he was doing his own thing, but he wasn't a household name. And then boom, Get Rich or Die Trying. I mean, one of the, you know, awesome albums that they were kind of under, so, or that they had their hands in. But when kind of moving ahead, you recently had a killer post. I thought it was pretty badass about the Chronic CD itself. And you talked a little bit about the original pressing and the 1992 BMG pressing. Can you share with the listeners what that difference was and maybe how you found out about that?
Yeah, of course. And thanks for the kind words. The album was December 15th, 1992. It came out, and I have a couple CD versions of it. You know, when I first bought it, Best Buy, it had, you know, the digitally remastered on it, you know, that the classic repress. That was my first copy. But then, you know, when I started to really buy more music, I started to pay attention to, you know, I wanted the original recordings, how it originally sounded like. I didn't want all the additional what have you. Sometimes they'll add stuff. But to this one, what was so interesting about it was that first CD pressing, which I have it in on most cases, or covers, I'm sorry, you'll see on the bottom left of the cover, it'll show a box. And what that box says, it says, you know, featuring the Death Row Inmates, and it'll promote some of the artists that are on the album, you know, Snoop, DOC, you know, the Dog Pound, Jewel, et cetera. Mm-hmm. On the first pressing, it does not have that box. And I believe that, I don't know how many copies of the first pressing were sold or released. I don't know if it's a specific number, but I do think that Suge or someone at the label pitched the idea that there should be, you know, something there to promote these artists. Because if you look at the back of the track list, it has the track names, but it has no artist names. And you kind of want to, for future releases, especially if you know, Snoop's coming out with an album next year, you're going to want to say, like, okay, well, Snoop's on this album. You want to say it's somewhere on the cover, so just the general passerbyer goes and sees that, even if they don't pick up the album. They'll be like, oh, well, this Dre album was hot. Oh, Snoop's on it? Oh, wow, I'm going to look out for Snoop's new project. Or DOC was on, I'm going to look out for his new project. So I think that the first pressing didn't have that, maybe to show a clean cover. The second pressing and forward, they added that. And I think that's a smart marketing technique. If you look at people like Master P, maybe he adopted that from Dre, you know, on all of his No Limit covers. At the bottom, it said featuring C Murder, featuring Snoop, featuring Mystical, featuring blah, blah, Mia X, blah, 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 blah. So these are things that could have been, you know, taken from Dre. Maybe Suge, you know, took it from someone. I don't really know. I'm not going to bust out my CD collection and see who did it first. But, even on the NWA and the Posse album, you know, they had like a featuring list, so maybe they borrowed it from that.
Sure.
But another cool thing about the back of the track list is that so Bitches Ain't Shit is the concluding song on the album. And on both the pressings, it doesn't say Bitches Ain't Shit. However, on the first pressing, somewhere in the middle of the track list, it has the word ain't, and there's a word before it and a word after it bleeped out, just left white. So it's obviously Bitches Ain't Shit, but the interesting about it is that its place in the middle of the track list, even though the song concludes the entire album. So it's a misprint in the sense that they marketed it as in the middle of the album when it's really the last song. And I think perhaps, I don't know why they omitted it from the actual track list on the later pressings. Mm-hmm. You would think maybe because it's, you know, using curse words, right?
Sure.
But they actually have the N-word on the back of the track list twice.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't think so. I don't think it was for the curse words. So it's interesting, you know. Definitely a smart album. Definitely a smart addition to add that featuring box. I think so. But, you know, I'm a nerd. I like to have the original stuff, and I like to have little variants like that because it really shows what the label was thinking at the time, what the artists were thinking at the time, and it gives you a little pick at their brain.
Yeah,
so,
it definitely does. It definitely does. And, man, like, I can appreciate a collector. And, like, when my buddy John and I would buy CDs, it was crazy. Like, we would always take the receipt and fold it and put it in the CD. I don't know why we would do that, but it's like little things, and whether it's a collection or it's something that you're kind of passionate about or you know these little facts, it's great that, you know, I met you on Instagram, and it's like we connected through music. You know, you're kind of a younger generation than I am, but it's really badass, dude, that that you're that passionate about it. And that's really kind of why we wanted to have you on. I knew for the last several weeks that the 25th anniversary was coming up. I think I looked it up last year, and I was like, man, I know it's got to be coming up. And I was like, oh, snap, it's next December. And here, fast forward, here we are. This is dropping on the 25th anniversary of The Chronic. And, dude, Amir, it's really been a pleasure having you on. I mean, any parting words or anything else that you kind of wanted to share?
Thank you. I'm humbled. Appreciate that, man. And of course, Instagram, it's one of those things that it's a blessing and a curse in the sense that, you know, you meet new people and people who have the same interests as you. You know, that's the blessing part. And the curse part is you show your collection and then all of a sudden the CD, the tape, the vinyl prices are all inflated because now more people want it.
Yeah, it's like, I know.
You know, it's cool to spread the culture, but then again, it sucks because you've spread it and now you essentially raise all the prices. So I can blame myself. I can blame quite a few people. I can definitely blame for that. But yeah, no, I mean, hey, and as much as I say that, I want people to support, I want people to buy, I want people to really listen and to understand what they're listening to, you know. So that's really what I got to say.
Hell yeah. So one other off-the-topic question is from an Instagram perspective. Like I said, from a music standpoint, you're one of my favorite follows, just being real, man. Who's one of your favorite, whether it be an artist or just another collector or someone that you maybe met, a homie, whatever, who's one of your top follows on Instagram in your opinion?
There's a few of them, and I wouldn't want to just name one.
Sure, yeah, you can name a couple.
You know, there's different standpoints, different viewpoints for this as far as why I would choose them. As far as like a, man, like just a funny standpoint, you know, I would probably go with Big Ghost LTD. You know, he takes on, kind of like the Ghostface Killer persona, really funny guy, but he also has an impressive collection. In addition to that, has a blog and produces now as well for the likes of, you know, Conway, West Side Gun. He's produced for other artists as well, Huss Kingpin, but he's one of them. Another collector who I like his collection would be, and he's also a funny dude, would be, you know, Money Miz.
Yes.
My boy, AD Uno. Yeah, he's a funny dude. We get into it at times, just making fun of each other. AD Uno, he's awesome. And, you know, Fila Flava, he's awesome. He's an older guy as well, you know, I think 30s, maybe 40s, really smart, has awesome sports and hip-hop references, really educated guy who also has a show called Take It Personal. So, you know, those are a couple of the people, but there's a lot of people who I respect on Instagram. And Legends Will Never Die with the killer anniversary posts and informative posts as well.
Hell yeah. Well, I tell you what's one really cool thing for anybody out there that's like an Instagram junkie like myself is when you run across someone like Amir and, you know, you appreciate what he or she does, what's really cool is when you're on their posts, like a lot of times you'll see an Instagram shows you like one or two people that have also liked that post. And I tell you, Amir, I've actually found other people that I've connected with just from people that like your posts. Or I'm like, oh, snap, okay, hip-hop back in the day. And then I'm like, oh, they have 42,000 followers. And then I follow them, and I'm like, oh, shit, they have cool stuff. So, like you said, social media is also a blessing and a curse. But try to take the blessings more than the curse, you know what I mean?
Oh, of course. That's what we hope for, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, again, just to remind everyone, it's Amir, A-M-I-R, and then it's Rahimi, R-A-H-I-M-I, number 7, all together. 18,500 followers, tons of awesome posts. If you like anything to do with hip-hop, you definitely have to follow him. He's real deal Holyfield, as I always say. But, Amir, man, it's been a pleasure. Maybe we can have you on later next year, and we can talk a little bit about some of the other albums. Anything that, you know, anniversary posts and things like that, and kind of highlight some of the other things that you're doing, man.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, you know, hip hop, it's what I love to talk about. You know, people usually don't like to talk to me about it. I don't stop talking. So anytime, man.
No doubt. Well, listen, I know you got a lot going on. Take care of yourself, homie. And if you ever need to get the word out, you can hit us up, bro. We got your back.
Hey, appreciate it. It was a pleasure. Yeah, and thank you for having me.
We got you.
He's a punk ass nigga. Yo, yeah. Yo, Death Row's in the motherfucking house. Wrecking shit, you know what I'm saying? This is Dr. Dre in the motherfucking house. No. Yo, I got my homeboys in the house. The Tall Clown's definitely in here. Yeah, yeah. I got my nigga Corrupt, ready to wreck some shit. Yo, you know who else I got in the house? Yo, some Diggy Dan. Step up on that ass, yeah. Guess what's in here? My homegirl Rage. I said my homegirl Rage. Yeah. The lyrical motherfucking murderer's in here. Yo, my nigga Glove behind the board. Yo, dropping that funky ass bass line. Yeah. You know it's a lot of punk ass niggas out there. A lot of punk ass bitches out there. Yo, you wanna write names? Yo, that nigga Eazy-E, he's a punky ass bitch, really dope. Yo, that nigga Tim M-U-T, he's a punky ass bitch, bitch. You know what I'm saying? Oh, Luke, I didn't forget about you, bitch. Really dope. Yo, Death Rose in the motherfucking house, running the 9-train, you know? Yeah. But right about now, there's a little freestyle session going on. In the studio, we just kick it back, getting fucked up and all. You know, puffing on a few blunts, drinking on a little bit of that Tanqueray. Tanqueray, yeah. Tanqueray's definitely in the house. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'm feeling it, baby. I'm feeling it. Really dope. So, right about now, hey, yo, Rage. Yo, Rage. Yo, run that shit, G.
Always and forever, forever and always. The rhythm will flow from now on through all days. As long as the sun shines, as long as eyes and hours on. Yo, I'll be kicking the rhyme. One time for your mind, your soul, your body. D.O.G.'s on the side of me, smooth as E&J. Hard as McCarty, smacking those out of yak. And ducks that keep quacking. His out of cackling, end up crackling. Under the heat, the pressure from the one that's deafer. Egyptian ruler, call me Cleo or Nefertiti. Yes, indeedy. Got the eyes that a beady body from Tahiti. Voice of the wind, lyrics blow. Chills up your spine, dice and so. All thoughts in your mind, drop.
To the Z, not
G's pay attention to the young ass Mac Daddy in the caddy, Hattie, not known about the city where the niggas hang around. So I roll them up and hit them up with the motherfucking dog pound.
I'm rough and rugged and up to do dirt. I'm from the dog pound, nigga, so I'm putting it work. I'm no joke, who the fuck you trying to provoke?
187.
It's cold, how his ass got smoked. I don't drink no fucking VSOP. I drink the motherfucking OGOE. I'm from the clique that be kicking the gangster shit, bitch. Real niggas, real G, with real big dicks. I hit him up with the pound. So what you wanna throw up? Claiming your cocaine or cavi when you blow up? Know what? The pound's in the motherfucking house back again. We try to get high as we can, Dr. Dre. Be kicking fat rhymes and produce and kick shit. I get more wicked than Beetlejuice. Motherfuckers get battered, so scatter before I keep ya hostage. And then get hostile like the Grim Reaper. So, I'm coming from my hood. What hood? To know, wouldn't you? I thought you knew. Motherfucker, don't you know I'm stranded on the road? I take a look into the crowd, pick a style to flow. I'm massive. Motherfuckers get murdered for action. Relax, kid. You're rolling with a fucking assassin. I last did dirt the other day. Betray the role of a G from the D-O-double-G-B-O-U-N-D. Pound so bow wow, motherfucking marks. The execution starts when the chronic is parked. I'm like Barkley. Rough and rugged, but raw like raw hair. Rex, I flex murderous rhymes to leave you all dead. What said is what said, it's already spoke. The dead is the dead, I ain't no fucking joke. I murder motherfuckers as a hobby. One of my idols ain't no joke, so why in the fuck should I be? Fly me to the Bahamas, rough drama, dramas. What you kicking? Wicked as hell, mama. Approach ya, the lobster, who's quick to up and smoke ya. You're looking like a smoker, grinning like a joker. I yoke you from the back like a bitch talking shit. Cause a bitch ain't shit, but a hoe and trick on my dick. Flip, let's take a trip to the dog pound. Who tried to pump me when I was young, but I'm a hog now. I get respect and I step with a tech nah. Ready to put something up in that ass so you respect mine. Boom, death row ain't lynching and the pound ain't mobbing. We all don't give a fuck when in your crib and start robbing. Robbing, I'm breaking niggas down in the 90s. Maxing at the pound with my dogs and with your fine. Biatch.
Hell yeah. You niggas can't fake this shit. You know what I'm saying? Death row's in the motherfucking house. The dog pound's definitely in here, you know what I'm saying? And, hey, yo, 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 you niggas can't fuck with this, so don't even try it. Stay in the studio all you want, stay in the studio all you want, cause you can't fuck with this. See ya!